Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be taking a deep dive into markets, paying particular attention to equities. We're going to be looking at what's happening in the US. We're going to be touching on UK equities, and we're also going to be looking forward to the rest of the year. And to do that, we're very kindly joined today once more by Mr. Mark Kimsey, who is the Director of F&O Research. Mark, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Hi, Jonathan. Thanks for having me.
Got a few months since you were on the podcast. It's always a great conversation, taking a deep dive into markets. As I said, we're going to be touching on various different topics. There's a lot happening at the moment. We're going to be touching on the AI trade. We're going to be looking at whether it is indeed a bubble, whether you think it's a bubble, and what other people out there are thinking about that particular area of the market. We're going to be touching on UK house builders very briefly. And we're also going to be looking at some of the ideas that you've had within your service that you've been giving out to your investors. But before we get into it, Mark, just a really quick recap. Could you give us an introduction, first of all, to yourself as well as F&O Research, please?
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. Well, I've been in financial markets now for, must be fast approaching, 25 years. And F&O exists to help the retail investor understand financial markets better, to cut through the noise and really deliver the need-to-know information in a timely fashion to help with their decision-making.
You put out at the beginning of each year a 2026 top picks. I think we went through those at the time, and we're going to touch on those again during this podcast. But I think it would be a good place to start, Mark. If we look back, of course, here we are just in the early stages of July. It's a good point to look back at the first half of this year. What were the key takeaways for you?
It's probably been the most eventful 6 months that I've witnessed in financial markets. Never a dull moment, and I realize that's the world that we live in today. And you know, social media ensures that news travels very quickly, and so you know, we're probably updated on every detail every minute, which probably causes some irrational behavior. But in terms of the major themes, well, give me a time machine and let me go back and pick up some of the semiconductor stocks, because you know, be them processing chips or memory chips, that has certainly been the place to be in the first half. A couple of standout performers, but there have been many, would be Micron. Shares were up approximately 300% in the first 6 months of the year. And SanDisk said, hold my beer, and rallied more than 800% in the first 6 months of the year. So anybody that was in that sector is certainly doing very well at the midpoint of 2026. Conversely, anybody invested in house builders or crypto, they have been very poor performers. Vistry, for example, the old Bovis Homes, down approximately 60% in the first half of the year. Just yesterday issued a profit warning and fell almost another 10%. So tough time for UK house builders. It's not just Vistry. They're all in the same boat. Crypto as well. You know, you couldn't sell Bitcoin quick enough last year or the year before as it rallied to record levels. But Bitcoin from its peak now is down more than half, Ethereum two-thirds, and XRP down three-quarters. So we've had the outperformance in chip makers, poor performance in house builders and crypto. And in between, what can only be described as the Big Dipper has been oil. With the US-Iran conflict kicking off, we saw oil spike very quickly before then plummeting back to pretty much where it started on the announcement of a peace deal. and actually starting to creep up once again as Trump has declared the deal over. So, yes, depending upon what you've traded in the first half of the year, you're perhaps doing very well, very badly, or somewhere in between. But possibly some grey hair and wrinkles have appeared for some investors this year.
Indeed, indeed. I mean, it's very much been about positioning so far this year. As you said, there's been some really strong performers. There's been places you just don't want to be during that period. And we're going to pick up on some of those during the podcast. And I think talking about some of those stocks there, SanDisk, as you say, up 800% at one point so far this year. Micron, I think, touched $1 trillion at one point. We're obviously looking at some of these moves. And, you know, naturally, when you see such big moves in markets, people start to call a bubble. And we've seen some wobbles in recent weeks. You know, some of those names have fallen off pretty sharply on a percentage basis from their highs. But obviously, if you take those from where they were at the beginning of this year, even go back, if you go back to a year, 2 years, you know, still huge gains there. But of course, those percentage gains from the highs are pretty dramatic when you're looking at them. So these wobbles, Mark, I think this is a good place to start and really get stuck into one of the big questions out there in markets at this point in time. Is it a wobble that you see in AI, or do you think that this is the sign of the end of the bubble of AI?
I would describe it as a bubble, and I wouldn't say it's the end. We are hurtling warp speed towards a technological future that I don't think that many of us can quite comprehend. Maybe I'm speaking for myself, you know, old dog, new tricks and all that. We are going to become more technologically advanced, you know, robotics, autonomous, everything. The world is going to look very different in 10, 20, 50 years' time. I won't be here, but I'm sure it'll be unrecognizable. And behind all of this new technology is going to be an insatiable demand for energy, processing power, storage facilities. And so these stocks, provided they maintain their place in the race, will inevitably be in demand. It will come down to sort of supply metrics. It'll come down to profitability as margins perhaps could be pressured. And I think that we will obviously experience pullbacks along the way, but my instincts tell me that perhaps these will end up presenting themselves actually as buying opportunities.
It's really interesting. I'd have to share your sentiment there, Mark. I mean, if we look back at some of the case study bubbles in history, you go back to the railroad bubble and crash that caused the depression, you know, that was real speculation, building railroads out into the middle of nowhere, hoping that towns were going to be built around them. Of course, they weren't, and that all fell apart. There was also huge amounts of leverage that we saw in past bubbles. And if you go back to the financial crisis, that was very much driven by speculation in the housing market, over leverage, you know, 0% mortgages were rife, and that's unwound. We don't really have that now. You know, there is underlying demand. As you say, there's going to be a very different world. It's going to be very difficult to know how that plays out. But one thing's for sure, that there is demand at the moment. You know, some of the companies there that you mentioned are actually seeing significant growth in their revenue. This isn't just speculation of people buying the stocks of what's to come. It is being backed up by the revenues coming through. And just looking at some of the forward multiples, of course, these haven't been recorded yet. So these are just predictions by analysts. But looking at Micron, the forward PE ratio is actually at 6. So it's 6 times next year's earnings. Now, of course, they're required to deliver huge earnings growth still. But, you know, even if they miss by 50%, you're looking at 12 times earnings. SanDisk. Now, at this point in time, about 650% up in the year, 8 times next year's earnings. Of course, predictions, but these are very low price to earnings. And, you know, if you look at this year's trailing, of course, it's a lot higher because there is an expectation of growth. But there's big spending still going from CapEx, from some of these hyperscalers. So it's backing it up. So the people that I see calling a bubble in the AI trade we're seeing at the moment tend to be those people that have maybe missed out or have a different mandate. I think people, as you say, that are, you know, have their fingers on the pulse, you know, are doing a lot of research into it and seeing what's happening there, look past the big share price gains and look to the underlying value of these companies in terms of their earnings and potential earnings going forward. So yes, there's going to be some hiccups along the way, but if these earnings forecasts are delivered on, I don't see any bubble here. So that's my view, but I'm sure we're going to catch up at some point, Mark, and I may be proved wrong.
Well, and also just to sort of touch on Micron, as you brought it up there, the difference with this bubble, if that's what we want to describe it as, is that there's a proper product, service, demand and business going on in the background. And I do sometimes see this AI bubble being somewhat lazily compared to the dot-com bubble of the turn of the millennium. And that's not fair. There was... I suppose we can describe it as mass fraud now that that time has passed. But there were, gold plaques on an office, somewhere in New York or San Francisco, masquerading as a tech company, and inside, you might have been lucky to find a desk or a chair. So that was a bubble of almost fraudulent proportions, whereas. Micron, I don't know if you recall, but their recent Q3 earnings were just unreal. They had revenue for the quarter of over $41 billion. That's just 3 months' work. That beat expectations of $35 to $36 billion, so way over what was expected. Earnings per share of about $25 versus something less than 21 expected. So, there is a proper business behind the descriptive of a bubble. And that's why I don't think it is. Now, one thing that we can certainly debate is whether or not the share price has got ahead of itself, for sure. When you look at companies that have gone up 300%, 500%, 800% in months or just a year or two, it's perfectly fine to say, hang on, has this gone too far too soon? And are we due some sort of pullback, some sort of rebalancing? Has the hype carried this share price past the point at which it should be fairly valued? That happens. That happens a lot of the time, actually, in a number of different sectors. But that's the question. Has it gone too far too soon and due a pullback to what is perhaps more fairly priced, therefore giving us the opportunity to get involved, not whether or not it's a bubble waiting to burst and clean investors out. It's definitely not the latter.
Yes, and I think when we were just seeing yesterday, and I think just looking at some of the pre-mark prices today, the pullback that we saw at the end of last week, beginning of this week, in some of these names has been very quickly bought into. Can't take anything away from the violence of some of the pullback of some of these companies. Some of these companies, down 20, 30% in a number of, a small number of trading sessions, that's a huge, huge move. But they've, of course, come such a long way. So you're going to see some profit taking coming in. I think that's what we saw. But of course, you've seen those buyers coming back in. Whether that persists, we will wait and see. So of course, there's choppiness in the AI trade. And I just want to bring it back to the UK now, Mark, and look at the FTSE 100 and UK stocks. Of course, there's no hyperscalers here in London. There's very few out-and-out technology companies, although I will note, too, we have some pretty good results and an update from Computer Centre this morning that is proving to be a real beneficiary of AI. It's really seeing the profits and revenues coming through from their efforts there. So that's a really good example of a company actually putting AI to work within their business in the UK and having those returns come through into their numbers. But if we look at the UK as a place of stability, it has outperformed, actually did outperform the S&P 500 for a period this year. During the depths of the conflict in the Middle East. But when you look at the UK and you look at what's happening out there, do you see it as a source of stability, and should it be a place to be and have some exposure to at this point in time?
Yeah, I like to refer to the FTSE 100 as a sort of safety net, really, for investments. I think that it's an index that is unfortunately not full of the sexy sectors and stocks, but it's a great place to retreat to when volatility spikes. So whilst trading isn't for everybody, you could position yourself to be taking advantage of the sectors within the US companies that are performing exceptionally well, some of those we've just mentioned. And then perhaps when Donald Trump decides to tweet something, you know, you can jump ship and occupy some steady, I use the word stable, perfect descriptive for the FTSE 100. And actually, if you look at periods of peak volatility, you know, you wouldn't go too far wrong picking up your Vodafones, Diageos, British American Tobaccos and AstraZenecas on the days where the markets are ill-performing. They usually stand out as areas of safe havens. So, yes, whether or not you're back and forth as the tides ebb and flow, or perhaps you find yourself predominantly invested in the attractive US technology firms, but assign a portion of your portfolio to defensive FTSE 100 stocks just as a sort of safety net there. They will no doubt, as I say, perform on the poorer days. And if you get stuck holding them, the dividends are usually very tidy as well. You know, scoring 8 to 10% yield on some of these stocks is commonplace.
Yes, I mean, it's very much a yield story, income story. I mean, there is quite a bit of disparity now. I think the overall index is yielding around 3%. It has been a lot higher, but there are within the index, you know, a number of high quality stocks. You can get 5-6% quite easily on, and they're nice to just tuck away for a rainy day. And as you say, they do provide a bit of stability there when we've seen some of those down days. But I mean, earlier this week and last week was a real example of that outperformance. So certainly one for the income seekers there in the UK. But looking at the sectors within the FTSE 100, we touched on the house builders at the beginning. Of course, this is a real favourite of investors in the UK. The sector turned out to be probably the leading proxy for what was happening in the Middle East due to the potential impact on inflation and therefore interest rates. So they were pretty heavily hit. I mean, as you said, Vistry and down about 60%. We've seen big declines in Barrett Redrow, Persimmon, Taylor Wimpey, really trading at multi-year lows at this point in time. And they do look attractive. Just from putting up the chart, they do look cheap. They have made a bit of a comeback recently. Of course, when there was the ceasefire, that suggested that we'd start to see oil flowing again from the Middle East. That tempered some of those fears around inflation to some extent. They made a bit of a comeback. They've eased off slightly. The numbers from Vistry this week didn't help. But what does this look like? Because this is one that's really tied to the wealth effect of the UK. You know, there's a lot of people that really associate their wealth with the value that they have in their home. And of course, the house builders are a real barometer of that. So it's really a really good sense of what's happening out there in the UK. Looking at what you've seen, Mark, out there, do you think they're set for more of a comeback, or is it going to be more sort of trading in a range, you know, from headline to headline, not really making any headway?
It's the sector that is at the top of my watch list at the moment. And I want to stress watch list, not buy list, just yet. I think there's more pain to come. The analytical team here put together a great piece on house builders back in March, actually sent a special report out to subscribers, making comparisons to 2022. The conflict back then was Russia, Ukraine, as we all remember, and the spike in oil prices drove inflation higher and prompted central banks to pump interest rates to levels not seen for many, many years. And that had a horrid impact on house builders. Whilst that year was fraught with headlines relating to the oil price, to Putin and defense contractors, and Rolls-Royce was going gangbusters back then, the victim that was dying the the death of a thousand cuts in the background, getting no column inches, were UK house builders. And roughly speaking, they fell about 60% from peak to trough in 2022. So it was a tough period for them then, and our team sort of warned that that could be incoming once again, and values have fallen dramatically this year. So it was a good piece by them. Vistry, as we mentioned, is now 60% this year. But if you go back a little bit further, it just gets even more desperate. In September 2024, less than 2 years ago, this stock was trading over £14 a share, and now you'll find it around £2.50 as we speak. That's a decline of 85% in less than 2 years. And we mentioned Vistry. It's not an isolated case. If you pull up charts on Barratt, Bellway, Persimmon, it's a similar story. They'll be down perhaps 60% plus, I'm guessing, from recent peaks. And so it's that sort of a discount that is always going to pique my interest. As I say, I wouldn't rush out and pick them up now. They are a victim of the cost of living crisis. Interest rates are still at varying degrees above the 3.75% base rate, which is still inflated versus where we were pre-conflicts of recent times and yesteryear. And, you know, the housing market in terms of, you know, the transactions associated with existing properties is hardly thriving. And so the demand for fresh ones is somewhat lagging. But, you know, that every dog has his day, and, you know, they'll be back. And so it's a case of monitor the prices, keep the stocks on the watch list, and really just look for a change in tone and the environment within which it operates. So we're talking about any sign of the Bank of England talking interest rate reductions, any government incentives, be it, you know, a reintroduction of the Help to Buy scheme or abolition of stamp duty for first-time buyers. And it is those two latter catalysts, I believe, could be in the offing later this year, in the new year. I think that the government is going to have to score some wins, and I'm pretty sure they'll be getting lobbied hard right now by the house builders to do something. And you know, is that discounted price, that misery combined with light at the end of the tunnel and a change in tone, that is usually that sweet spot for, you know, the starter pistol to get involved. So it's a sector that I'm watching very closely. Wouldn't get involved with just yet, but it's certainly on the list.
Yeah, I mean, that really echoes a conversation I had with a fund manager very recently, Mark. They were saying, look, hugely undervalued. You know, some of these house builders are trading below their book value at this point in time, which of course suggests deep value there. But they did say as well, we have to wait for some form of catalyst, you know, whether that's going to be government policy, whether that's going to be monetary policy from the Bank of England. You know, at the moment, it's a really poor environment for house builders. Of course, you know, most of the wider housing market in the UK as well is particularly weak. So, as you say, it's probably going to be a catalyst that gets these moving. But whether they rally into any potential catalyst, that's always a potential play. So certainly an interesting sector to watch. So you mentioned then one of your reports, Mark. I've just been looking at your recap for 2026. And just as a note to listeners, if you'd like to know a little bit more about F&O's reports and research, do check out the notes to this podcast, because there's going to be a link through to a sample report which will have some of the ideas covered that we've touched on in this podcast. But just want to move over to the space industry. Of course, we've had SpaceX IPO in recent weeks. Of course, it shot up and shot back down pretty quickly. But just looking here in your report, AST Space Mobile was one of your best performers, I think, for the for the first half of this year. Might correct me there if I'm wrong. But of course, just looking at the space industry, looking at SpaceX, what's your overall view here? Is this a, you know, industry that's set to grow? Is it going to be a bit of a flash in the pan? Is, you know, the SpaceX, you know, is that the top of hysteria that we've seen around it? How do you see this all playing out?
Well, I turned 45 last week, and I certainly feel 65 at times. And I do find it sometimes challenging to comprehend where we're going with tech, AI, space. Perhaps, my junior son would probably be able to explain it to me. But I said earlier on in the podcast, you know, old dog, new tricks. And I find it very difficult to understand, you know, colonizing Mars, building data centers on the moon. But, you know, if Elon Musk says it's possible, you know, who's to question him? I know he's pretty Marmite as a character, but there's no debating the guy's intelligence. And I find it hard to comprehend where this will all end up. I find it even more challenging to put any value on it, because there's no precedent. And so really, whilst I'm totally captivated by the story and what the future holds, for me at this point, investments in something like SpaceX, I think, has to be chalked up to a very speculative position. Not that I wouldn't undertake one, but you know, it wouldn't be where the mortgage money's going, that's for sure. Companies like AST SpaceMobile, that's, I suppose, comparable to one of Musk's other companies like Starlink. We're talking about direct, you know, handset to satellite connectivity for data broadband calls. And so it's a more efficient way of ensuring that you can get online or on calls without going through the old, you know, copper network of yesteryear. So that's certainly a sector that excites me. I wouldn't be surprised if Musk starts to develop handsets, and, you know, whilst you might choose to buy, you know, a Samsung if you're into Android, or an Apple iPhone if you like the iOS operating system, I believe at some point in the not too distant future you'll be able to go and buy a Starlink handset. So I can get my head around that for sure. But touching on SpaceX, you know, it's a very interesting time for those that are interested in a speculative position, because as we speak, it's about $150 a share, which is certainly the lowest price that you could have paid in its very short trading career, bar obviously the IPO price of $135. We had the initial pop and now back down at $150. You could have only have got it lower at the IPO stage. And since its NASDAQ inclusion, a lot of Wall Street analysts have been prompted to cover the stock. In fact, I counted no fewer than 18 analyst calls issued on the day of its NASDAQ 100 debut. And the target prices ranged from $190 all the way up to $300, with an average of about $227, about 50% higher than where we are. So, you know, a blanket of buy calls, varying degrees of upside forecast. And actually, just in the last 24 hours, Raymond James has come up with an incredible target price of $800, indicating more than 400% upside. And they believe that SpaceX is going to be, you know, the biggest kind of revolution of industrial terms, you know, in the 21st century. You know, the plan that Musk has got for AI, data connectivity, and, you know, harnessing all that there is to harness in orbit. They've said, you know, come at some point in the future, we'll look back at this as, you know, sort of an internet introduction, or as you mentioned earlier, you know, railroad, or, you know, the power of steam. And you know, they're incredibly bullish on it. And like I say, $800, so maybe it is worth a punt.
Well, I've seen estimates of the potential, you know, market opportunity for SpaceX of $28 trillion. And obviously being the first mover in some of these areas, and you know, you can't see other players getting in there anytime soon, you're going to expect they're going to take quite a significant proportion of that $28 trillion if you know, it turns out to be that size. But of course, you know, it's with some of these technology companies, especially in the AI space, you know, it's all new ground. It's all huge numbers. You know, a $28 trillion potential market opportunity. It's difficult to fathom. It's, you know, it's different to anything that we've seen in the past. But you know, this looks like where the world's going. You know, it looks like it's going into space, and Elon Musk and SpaceX are the first people to do it, and they've got the infrastructure. And you know, some of their closest competitors are being dogged with obviously disasters. We've seen, you know, some of those explosions from some of their competitors on their rockets. So it looks as though they've got something there. It's such a diverse business as well, and all playing into the AI space as well. So certainly going to be an interesting stock to watch going forward, especially if Raymond James's $800 target, if the stock get anywhere near there, it's certainly going to be the world's most valuable company, or one of, depending on when it gets there and where everybody else is. So certainly an interesting space to watch. But of course, it's not just SpaceX this year. We've had the notice that Anthropic and OpenAI have filed confidentially to list in the US. You know, there's no real time scales of when this is going to happen. I'm sure the wobbles in the AI sector recently haven't helped their case, but they might be sort of sitting on their hands for the time being. But when you're sort of looking at these companies, Mark, is it really a situation that we're getting to a point where we've got the biggest companies in the AI space that are listed, you know, in SpaceX or soon to list? Does that, going back to the point that we made at the beginning, does that suggest a bit of a top for you? You know, everybody says when you get these big listings, it tends to signal a top, or is this going to be different this time?
It could be, and certainly, you know, they're making the most of the market climate. You know, it's fever pitch out there at the moment, and you know, stocks that are linked to AI, semiconductors, space, you know, millions and billions are not even in the conversation. As you mentioned, it's trillions, and you know, if you can be pinching, you know, some market share, you know, not a lot of it means, you know, significant revenue. So there'll be, you know, their listing is not coincidental in terms of timing. I would expect both companies to probably get off to very successful starts. They'll probably be adequately priced to ensure there's some shareholder value. Like SpaceX, I do expect both Anthropic and OpenAI to assign a portion of the IPO to the retail investor. And I like this, by the way. You know, that's been very refreshing to see. And I think, again, although he's a divisive character, Musk insisting that the, you know, the man on the street can participate, I think was very noble of him. And, you know, great for the retail investor community, because I see Anthropic and OpenAI following suit there. And this was usually an opportunity reserved exclusively for the big institutions. So it's great that we can get involved. And I would expect both of these IPOs to get off to very good starts. And they're going to be in the thick of it, you know, for years to come. You know, again, how accurately can we price these companies? Are they profitable? What do their margins look like? All of that has kind of gone out the window for now. It's all about the future and the hype around being part of one of these major players that's going to be at the forefront of you know, technology that we can't quite yet comprehend. So I do think that they'll be well observed to start with. But as I say, you know, I don't think it's a mortgage money opportunity. I think that you'd be well within your rights to be buying SpaceX and Anthropic and OpenAI. But I see them as not fledgling companies, but in fledgling industries. For a retail investor, I would treat this like I would perhaps, you know, a small cap opportunity, like I might back a small oil and gas exploration company to perhaps, you know, strike it lucky. You know, majority of my funds would perhaps be in BP by comparison. But if these guys, you know, hit oil, they'll go from pennies to pounds. I don't actually need to have significant money in there to make it a worthwhile opportunity. And I would do the same with SpaceX and Anthropic and OpenAI. Of course, they're not small cap companies, but I would treat them in exactly the same way and apportion, you know, a very modest part of the portfolio on the basis that, you know, maybe it can 3, 4, 5, 10x. But I'm certainly not going to take the risk of that with meaningful portions of the portfolio.
It's really difficult because, I mean, these companies are very much, you know, front and center in the AI push. You know, that they are the two biggest players out there. But it all comes down to, you know, if when you look past, you know, all of the hype and the revenue growth, how much money they're making. And for, you know, at this point in time, people aren't thinking about that. People are thinking, you know, 2, 3 years in the future, because you know, the market's relatively stable. Of course, we've seen some wobbles out there so far this year. But if you start to see wobbles in the market, you start to see maybe some policy mistakes from, you know, even a government or a central bank, people very quickly start to look at companies like this which aren't generating a profit. And it's one of the first things they start to shout about and say that, you know, that they're not actually making any money. But, you know, if we have stable market conditions and they're able to thrive, and, you know, of course, the US is the best place for these types of companies to do that, when you start to see those earnings coming through. I mean, if you go back and look at Amazon, for example, for years and years, it wasn't making a profit. And, you know, people talking about the valuations, but just look at where it is now. And I think that's going to be a similar story for these particular companies. So, Mark, we've obviously discussed some of your ideas and your reports in this podcast. You did put out at the beginning of the year the top picks for 2026. I think we had a conversation around that at the time. Let's just have a quick rundown just to finish off here. What did you have in there, and, you know, what the standouts?
Yeah, well, to give you the standouts, I should probably share the top and bottom performers. So there were 12 companies that featured in our top picks for the year, and it's always a report I look forward to reading, but you know, a daunting task because you know, trying to forecast you know, 12 days ahead is a challenge in this day and age, let alone 12 months. But you know, someone's got to do it, and investors want to see it, and so we'll put our head on the block and see what we can come up with. And you know, let's start with the poor performers. Number 12 is Microsoft, down 24%. Surprised at the underperformance actually for Microsoft, and you know, from a technical perspective, the more it falls, the more appealing I think it looks. Number 11 is Oklo. For those that are not familiar with the name, is a small modular reactor nuclear energy company, pre-revenue generating, so speculative, but something that we felt would come into demand, and still believe it will actually in the coming months and years. Quite frankly, linked to the AI story, you know, we do need a hell of a lot more power every time we burn something. You know, we get told off, so you know, oil and gas will always be under pressure. You know, the green technologies, I'm not a fan of, but that's a chat for another day. But you know, solar and wind are just not up to it, quite frankly. So perhaps nuclear is the way to go, but with, you know, notorious stories such as, you know, Fukushima and Chernobyl, it's always raises an eyebrow when you talk about nuclear, although it is very clean and very stable. And, you know, Fukushima was a natural disaster and Chernobyl was a human error. So, and these small modular reactors, you can get them up and running a hell of a lot quicker, you know, a couple of years in the making, rather than a big nuclear power plant. You're talking about more like 20 to 30 years, and they're powerful enough to power cities. So the idea is you can have a number of them dotted around and contributing towards energy demands. A good bit of trivia actually is the chairman of Oklo for about 10 years was Sam Altman, who's the CEO of OpenAI. So I find it very intriguing that the chap behind OpenAI and understanding all of those power demands, was also the chairman of an energy company. And he only resigned last year just because OpenAI and Oklo were both growing to the point where there were questions starting to be asked about conflicts of interest. So he stepped down to avoid those questions, I suppose. And number 10, Taylor Wimpey. We thought that the house builders had probably been through enough pain at the beginning of the year. Little could we foresee that just a couple of months later, US-Iran kicked off. And so, yeah, to summarize, Microsoft down 24%, Oklo down 23%, and Taylor Wimpey down 22% this year. So they're the poor performers, proves that we're human and can pick some underperformers. If we look at the top performers, that's where it gets more interesting. AMD, we've covered the semiconductor space. They're up 151% at the midpoint of the year. So that's certainly bailing out some of the underperformers. Second, we have ASML, which is a company that creates the equipment that creates the semiconductors. And that was picked on the basis that it was becoming somewhat challenging to try to pick the next semi performer. Whilst we put our head on the block with AMD, if you look this year, Nvidia, for example, has barely moved. I think it's about flat for the year, whereas Micron's up 300%. So if you have to try and pick which particular stock, it'd probably be just our luck that we might have picked Micron. So the idea is if we pick ASML and they're providing the equipment that makes the chips for these guys, then just providing that that space is very productive, they'll be coming to ASML, which is pretty much a monopoly in terms of that space. And so the shares of ASML at the midpoint this year up 69%. So 151 for AMD, 69% for ASML. And then in third space, CoreWeave up 45%. And that, for those who are not familiar with the name, is an AI cloud computing provider. So again, you know, right stock in the right space.
Thank you. Just as a quick note, F&O have very kindly provided a discount code to their service. If anybody wants to have a look at it, there's two things in the notes. That there'll be a sample of one of the reports with some ideas in there. There's also going to be a code for a 50% discount to their service that you can use on the checkout. So do check out the notes for those two things. So Mark, fascinating conversation today. We've covered a lot of ground, and I'm sure we're going to be speaking again before long. I think it's probably going to make sense to pick it up again when we maybe see Anthropic and OpenAI hit the market and we see some big moves out there, or if we see some big moves out there in AI. So Mark, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me on, and look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Likewise. Thank you very much, Mark. And thank you very much to everyone for listening. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.